From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It is raining here, the bottom tip of the African continent, but it's strange weather. It's quite warm. It's currently 28 degrees Celsius, but it is storming outside. I hope it doesn't come through the microphone. just to add to being African, I also have no electricity. We have our rolling blackouts, as I have spoken about many times. Currently, it's quite a good phase that we're going through. I think I've only had 4 hours today of no electricity. That's generally considered quite good here in South Africa, because we average around 8 to 10 hours per day of no electricity every single day. And I'm not exaggerating. You can look it up on the internet. I know that there are international media outlets that are starting to pick up on our rolling blackouts. It's quite a severe problem. We've had rolling blackouts in South Africa for about 15 years, but they have intensified in the last 2 years, substantially intensified. And I have a suspicion that it's not about corruption and maintenance. I think those are secondary vectors. I think the primary vector is policy, and policy that is directly connected to the World Economic Forum, sustainable development, all of these carbon net zero agendas. And I have a very strong feeling, although I can't prove it, but I have a very strong feeling that South Africa is a playground for this exact outcome. I know that, for example, in 2009, the South African government signed a pledge with the United Nations to reduce our carbon emissions by 42% by the year 2025. We are now in the year 2023, and our carbon emissions, if you look at our output at the moment, is around, it's down by 37%. So that seems to be on target for this promised downgrade of this ridiculous sustainable development nonsense that is harming an already poverty-stricken country. Can you imagine what it must be like for the millions of South Africans who struggle already as it is, and now they have to sit with 8 to 10 hours a day of no electricity? Oh man, what a ridiculous situation. We find ourselves in. Send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Let's do this. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Your trusted news source.
We stick to the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Tony Gosling, nice to chat to you again. Thank you for joining me in the trenches. Am I coming through loud and clear?
Okay, yeah, I can hear you fine. Just picking up on some of the stories there, isn't it interesting how Boris is being in Westminster is being hauled over the coals at the same time as Trump is being threatened with arrest? Now, these are both people who believe in sovereignty of individual countries. So I think you can kind of look at almost every single story that's going on out in the world there today, particularly, I mean, in the geopolitics world, as either a globalist or not. You know, so there are people fighting globalism, Trump and Boris, and there are others who are just pushing it. And, you know, they just appear as soon as the someone like Boris is removed, as he was last year. You know, all these Romaniacs, we call them, you know, want to stay in the EU. They love the idea of a United States of Europe. They just pop up and they start to move forward again. And so, you know, this is almost, I think, definite that what we're looking at is a parallel operation going on both in the US and the UK, with the Americans trying to make sure that Trump's political career is over, and the same with Boris in Britain.
Well, it seems to be a game of chess, isn't it, that's being played all over the world?
Yeah, and the reason, I mean, I was nagging you slightly, and it's thank you very much for getting me on to talk about the Bilderberg meeting this year, because, you know, I've spent probably most of my life now, actually since around 1995, 96, and I was a journalist at the BBC, started in 89, and when I left in 94, You know, I kind of knew there was things that were wrong, but when I came across the Bilderbergers in 95, I realized this was what every journalist really needs to understand and know. So I spent quite a lot of time, decades, trying to fathom them out. And I think I have kind of bottomed out the story of exactly who these people are, how they started. I mean, it's basically the occult, which is a polite way of saying Satanism. And the occult is out there doing their thing. I mean, basically, they're creating various, you know, philosophies around the idea of justifying their selfish position, their wish to just bring their selfishness to bear on the world. And what we've discovered this year with some work from people in Lisbon in Portugal is that the police have confirmed that the Bilderberg meeting will be taking place between the 17th of May and the 20th of May in Lisbon. And it's quite a nice place. If anyone is interested in coming down there, I shall be doing my best to get down there. What you get is you get all sorts of fascinating people coming down to do a kind of observing them and critiquing them. So that's what we'll be doing this year. But who exactly is Bilderberg? Well, they were set up during the Second World War, I repeat, during the Second World War, really by the Central Intelligence Agency and by the European aristocracy. Obviously, the CIA didn't exist during World War II. It was actually a committee of the Council on Foreign Relations that then went on to take this into the CIA after the war. And it was, the fascist aristocracy in Europe all decided, well, we know that Germany's going to lose World War II, but we need to control the outcome. And this was done in parallel with NATO, that also appeared after the war. They were working on this stuff from 1942, 43, 44, right to the end of the war. And so they had a military and political alliance already going. Bilderberg was the political side, really, the attempt to control politics throughout Europe to keep the Russians out, the Americans in, and the Germans down. And they, of course, look at Nord Stream. They've been doing it ever since. You know, the idea of making sure that the Germans are a submissive country that doesn't care if the Americans blow up a major part of their infrastructure, as they did last year. So the Bilderbergers are at the heart of a lot of this. And one of the things we had a look at, I did with Charlie Skelton, who's a freelancer who spends quite a lot of time in Portugal too, which is rather nice, is we had a look at last year's Bilderberg meeting, and it's quite clear that the people that signed off that Nord Stream operation, we're talking about National Security Council chair, the whole lot of them, the CIA chief, the head of the Office of Net Assessment, which looks at all of the cost-benefit analysis of these covert operations, they were all at that Bilderberg conference in Washington last year. And the military operation, the NATO exercise, where the bombs and the gelignite, or whatever it is these days, C4 explosives, were planted on the Nord Stream pipeline. That exercise started the day that Bilderberg in Washington finished last year. So this organization is where they all come together face to face, so they can make discussions and deals where there's no microphones listening. They get the whole place swept very thoroughly for bugs. And so they know that it's confidential agreements that are taking place in there. But they really are a Western international fascist organization that is designed to really operate with the West as one mind, one country. And they have, due to their power through the financial system, they have all of the press in the West, pretty much, all of the mainstream press anyway, and all of the political parties in the West in their thrall. And they're famous over the years for picking presidents, picking prime ministers like Blair, who appeared at the Bilderberg conference in 1992, I think it was. And then 2 years later, he was chosen as leader of the Labour Party, then went on to start the Iraq War, etc. That's how these things operate. They're not going to allow anybody anymore in the West to get into a position of power due to the will of the people or by chance. They want to control the whole game. And you mentioned chess. That's exactly what it's like. There's a black and white board, and they control the black side, they control the white side. If they can control both sides of the chessboard, they know they win the game. And they do see it as a game. They use game theory too, Jeremy.
Just quickly, the Bilderberg Group is a fascinating organization. They've been around for, as you pointed out, decades. And their existence was, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was officially denied until about the 1990s. So the people who were saying that they existed were obviously in those days labeled conspiracy theorists. And then after the 90s, they're like, okay, you guys are conspiracy realists. Now, why were they so secretive? Who were they? What were they doing? And, you know, what was their purpose?
Well, the thing is, they deny the existence of Bilderberg when it suits them. I mean, there are press reports, even in the 1960s, about this meeting taking place. It started in 1954, 10 years after the end of the Second World War. And, yeah, so you do see some reports in the press, even in the 1960s, about them, but it's innocuous. So it's just a policy gathering, you know. Having said that, in 2000, when we went and rumbled the Bilderberg conference in Jeanval, just outside Brussels. I think, yes, it was in Brussels. There was a massive press. We knew some people who were involved in the national newspapers there. So on the Saturday, we got loads of press down. They were really annoyed about it. And it was all over the TV on the Saturday night and the Sunday in Belgium. And you know what? They put out a statement initially saying, no, there's no dignitaries here. This is a croquet tournament going on. So they just lie, you know, they lie. I mean, actually, it didn't fool the Belgian press because one of the papers covered it or one of the TV channels covered it on the Saturday evening. All of the Belgian press suddenly were down there on the Sunday. So it should be obvious to anybody that if you've got people that control most of the money in the Western world and a lot of the political leaders, that this is newsworthy. But of course, the problem is you've got a lot of the media empires are actually sitting in there, and they've sworn this vow of secrecy, sitting around the table with these bankers, with these politicians, and cooking up who's going to win the next election, that sort of thing. One of the papers that's always involved is the Economist. You always see a lot of the from the London Economist there, people who are editors sitting around, never writing about it in their Economist. But then that's because you've got the Agnelli family and the Rothschild family are the main owners now of the Economist paper. So these families, you know, the Fiat, which is one of the major Italian contributors to the Bilderbergs over the years, it's their own in-house Bilderberg newspaper. So everything you read in The Economist is what they want you to hear, what they want you to think. And they're quite busy shutting down anything that opposes them, anything that exposes them. When they notice a newspaper doing that, then they, as what's happened to Charlie Skelton, Charlie's a good friend of mine. He was writing in The Guardian for several years, taking the mickey out of the Bilderberg, doing things like the shower curtain of shame, because we were photographing through one of the windows and they put this shower curtain thing up, and he's like, and he had a great piece in The Guardian about the shower curtain of shame, really lampooning them beautifully as the, you know, old British satirists over the years have done. And, you know, he's now been shut out of The Guardian completely. He can't get his stuff into The Guardian. He's doing stuff for International Business Times and various other outlets. But, you know, they shut people down who expose them, and particularly those that take the mickey out of their horrific, you know, their fascistic attitude and their lack of humour and their lack of subtlety. Now, Kissinger is a very big person here. In the old days, David Rockefeller was funding things, and he was a major figure. And I met him at one of the Bilderberg conferences, a very interesting guy. But he's now he's died and he's out of the way. And that was oil and banking money. Now what we've got, I think, in charge is your new money, your Peter Thiels, your PayPals, but most importantly, social media companies, all the big social media companies, Twitter, etc., your Elon Musks, you know, everybody who you can think of has been a major figure, Gates, etc., have been to these conferences over the years. But it seems to be mainly the social media people who are now in charge. Now, of course, I was just discussing with some friends earlier on today, you know, when radio first appeared, it was great for a few years and then it was shut down, and TV appeared. It was great in the 60s and 70s. There's still some fantastic TV serials you can go and watch out there, like The Prisoner, etc. And then that was shut down. Then the internet appeared, and now they're shutting that down because they're buying it all up. And they're not just doing that, but people like Google are just removing all sorts of great content, you know, stuff from my email list, some my entire YouTube channel. with 25 million views. And it was taken down, my public inquiry channel, by them for no reason at all. An old video that had been there for years that wasn't even part of their new guidelines, you know, what they call it, community guidelines. So they just pull the stuff whenever they feel like it, because they don't want to understand and know what's really going on, Jeremy.
Tony, let me just quickly do an ad break and I'll be back with you in a moment.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
So Houston, the government stepped in because failing raids. And they were also, the government, not happy with all of the programs for disabled kids. They were not up to par. Now, it's fair to say, pre-pandemic, now, education system lacking behind. Easily, kids are at least a year behind. Now, here's the problem. This is mostly the majority house is Republican. So the Democrats are fighting, again, that weaponization, which does not belong in the school classrooms and all that. But what do? When it's a failing school system. And of course, the ACLU, they stepped in and they're fighting because they want everybody to have freedom. The problem with Houston is, and this is what we really have to look at, and people are afraid to really go near this point, but I'm going to mention it. The public school system in Houston is 90% made up of children of color, Black, Hispanic. And why not be able, in my warrior's dream world, can you imagine school choice for these kids? Who could really, you know, flower in this environment?
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio.
At SmileTrain, we envision a world where every child with a cleft has the opportunity for a healthy, happy life. Children with clefts often struggle to eat, to speak, even to breathe. Addressing every challenge often requires more than a single surgery. That's why SmileTrain empowers our medical partners to care for the whole patient and provide ongoing, comprehensive cleft care. Comprehensive cleft care includes speech services, life-saving feeding and nutrition programs, psychological counseling, orthodontics, dental care, diagnostic, and hearing services. SmileTrain supports these essential treatments for as long as each child needs to reach their full potential.
Visit SmileTrain.org to donate and change a child's life forever. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Tony, at these Bilderberg meetings, is it just a cool kids club, or does actual geopolitical maneuvering occur as a result of these meetings?
No, I don't think that there's any real decisions made there. What they tend to be, it may be, say, for example, the Nord Stream thing gets finally signed off. You know, when they've run it past, you know, maybe von der Leyen and, you know, one of the president of Europe or whatever. But I think most of the policymaking gets done behind closed doors, behind the scenes, you know, by the Central Intelligence Agency. That's really what it's designed to do. It's really running U.S. foreign policy with the Council on Foreign Relations, and the government is a sideline. So that's how it works, I think. Also understand that the governments now are just, although the press focuses a lot on our political leaders, every single day they've got less and less and less and less power. Because you know why they got less and less money? Because all of our Western countries are being sucked into this massive debt trap. They're scrabbling around to actually, they can say it whatever they want, but they can't actually implement it because they don't have the resources to do it anymore. And all the time they're scrabbling around just to make sure they can repay debts to the banks. I mean, it's become a kind of pantomime, really, I think, the Western political leaders. And of course, what happens during COVID, what is the same sort of thing that happens in war? So they will get bribed. They'll be told by the IMF, okay, we want you to do all these lockdowns and we're going to give you all this money to do it, or lend you all this money to do it. And of course, they just take the money and they're not really thinking about who's going to have to pay the bill at the end of the day. They just take the money, they take the bribe. And so and that's exactly what goes on with the wars too. So there's all sorts of, you know, pressure put on them by those that have lent them money, saying, well, we will roll over your debt, etc., but only if you do X, Y, and Z. So the banksters are really, really in charge in the West. And the one person who's put the nail on this one absolutely better than anybody else, I would say, as a former mainstream media London journalist, is a guy called Michael Hudson. Michael Hudson, he's done a comparison between finance capitalism in the West and the old mixed economy we used to have in Britain and South Africa and various other countries after the war, which is where you've got a large part of your state is devoted to infrastructure. So you're actually taking money, a little bit of money from infrastructure to feed into the treasury, but most of the economy is just out there doing other things. The infrastructure is being provided at cost. What we're now seeing in the finance economy in the West, according to Michael Hudson, I think he's spot on, is where the capitalists are moving. They can't make money anymore. They can't compete with China. So what they do is they just take over the utilities. Well, you were talking about what's going on with the power cuts in South Africa. Is that these are now being run by private individuals, private companies for private profit. Maybe what they need to do in South Africa is shut down those final coal-fired power stations, you know, and then there'll be hardly any electricity and it'll be rationed. But this is the way they do things. They like to ration the supply. Then they can jack up the price, jack up the profits. And the government is, you know, in South Africa, as in the UK, is virtually impotent. I mean, we've got this ridiculous situation with you know, massive rises in energy prices, but not justified at all. And the government's doing nothing about it, largely because we've got a guy called Rishi Sunak in charge, who is doing it the job of Goldman Sachs. He's a Goldman Sachs employee, just like Macron used to work for the Rothschilds. These people are just operators for the banking cartels, running our political system in the interests of shareholders. And that's where we are in the West now. And this is what Hudson explains is makes every difference between the West and Russia, the West and Iran, the West and China even. Is there, the Chinese have not let go of their infrastructure to private equity firms, and they have no intention of doing it, but we've done so. And that's why I think we've got this war in Ukraine. Is actually, what's really going on is a battle of two different systems, a finance capitalist system in the West and an industrial capitalism system in the East. And of course, this is being set up for a potential World War III, Jeremy.
So are you saying then, Tony, that at these meetings, they are very vague deliberately, but they plant the seeds for future agendas?
Look, these the seeds are planted by groups like the Council on Foreign Relations. The plans are made by by the private interest behind the scenes that want to acquire the energy, whatever it is, the oil resources, the gas resources, the resource wars is at the back of this. And they're constantly, these big companies have got massive, massive surpluses in profits. And they can even funnel money into these sorts of covert operation think tanks that it's tax deductible. So they can plan a Nord Stream operation along with the US military and then deduct it against tax. That's effectively what's going on here. The Bilderberg Conference itself is very important in that it's a face-to-face meeting between all these various collaborators. And also the other thing they've been doing over the years is bringing in people who are influential, but they're not on side with the NATO operations, right? So they are brought in to schmooze them, and it's almost like, well, why would you not want to be part of this club? You know, we're so powerful, and we've got such a load of lovely people like Mr. Henry Kissinger chatting on about how, oh, you know, we've got to do the right thing in Ukraine and cede some territory. I mean, he's a very clever chap. You know, he's a multiple war criminal. In Indonesia, he was involved in that. He was involved in the invasion of Cyprus. He was involved, of course, in the coup in Chile. Many, many, multiple war criminals. But, butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He stood there saying, oh, yes, well, we need to come to a solution in Ukraine with I can't really do the accent. It's sort of American-German accent. and we need to do something in Ukraine. And we must, the Russians must have their bits of territory. Well, of course, his people are all around him and making sure they don't have that territory. But he's trying to come across to all these other world leaders as the reasonable one. Now, I mean, one of the things I discovered in looking into the Bilderbergers was the links to Freemasonry, because Andrew Palmer, He was the convener of the Turnberry Bilderberg meeting in the 1990s. I've looked much more closely at the ones that have happened in the UK. He just so happened to be the private secretary to the Duke of Kent, who's the world's number one Freemason. He was the cousin of the Queen, the uncle, I suppose, of King Charles. And Charles, of course, is very much involved in all of this stuff. And when he gets his coronation in May, a lot of people are saying, well, look, you can't be a copper, you know, at the COP 26, 27. You can't be at the World Economic Forum, Charlie, and also King of England, because, you know, the two are just not compatible. Justin Walker has put out this brilliant letter that a lot of British people are sending to the people organising the coronation, saying, well, he needs to make his mind up. He can't be King of the world and also King of England. He needs to, you know, one, because the two interests are not the same. They're not basically the same area. So, you know, we are in an interesting situation, a kind of hiatus in Britain, where if Charles really takes over, as it looks as if he will, because I think his mum was different, you know. Queen Elizabeth used to kind of do all this stuff at arm's length. She wasn't an interventionist person. But as we've seen with the Northern Ireland Protocol, you may have missed that in your news, but the Northern Irish have been completely sold out by this government and to Brussels. You know, we're supposed to be one country. We're ruled by something called the Conservative and Unionist Party in Northern Ireland. And what's happened is they've just completely sold the Irish to the Brussels people. Another thing is, I've had a video which YouTube forced me to remove, which is a fascinating film made by the BBC in 2002 by Alenka Frankel, which is all about the Dutroux paedophile ring in Brussels. And even reading a Daily Express article by Dutroux's lawyer from a couple of years ago, the other day, refreshing my understanding of this case, he said that Dutroux had got the money and the resources to build a city for paedophiles underneath Brussels, which is their headquarters. I mean, he was arrested and he's doing time now for his murder gang, paedophile murder gang that he was running around about 2000, the biggest demonstrations ever seen in Belgium against him. But this is the headquarters of the European Union, and this is their headquarters of NATO, with a paedophile city being proposed to be built underneath the city. I mean, you couldn't make it up, but there it is, all in black and white. This is absolute evil. And the idea that you know, we should be in Europe, ruled from Brussels, from an EU, which has got no democratic, real democratic accountability. It's all run by a European Commission and a president of Europe now, Ursula von der Leyen, that nobody voted for. Well, I mean, if you wanted to sell your soul to the fascist Illuminati elite, that's the way to do it. Get on board with Brussels, because they are really the center of evil in Europe. That's certainly the way I see it. And they're very, very closely connected with the Bilderbergers. The Bilderbergers have been building up the European Union over the decades, ever since the Second World War, Jeremy.
Is there an overlap, Tony, with the Bilderberg members and, say, the Bohemian Grove members and the World Economic Forum members, etc.?
World Economic Forum, much more so. But you see, the Bilderberg is just the NATO countries. So it's the military core of the World Economic Forum, if you want. I would suggest that it's much more secret than the World Economic Forum. You know, you can watch the WEF on TV, you know, see all the traitors going, like Keir Starmer, the leader of the opposition here in Britain, to go and sell his soul, say, look, you know, I'll do anything for you, the World Economic Forum, please, so I can be the king of Britain, you know. And so the World Economic Forum is much more public, much more open. And also, of course, they are I don't know how many people understand that they are becoming the United Nations. They've done a hostile takeover bid, successful hostile takeover bid, as many of these big businesses do, for the UN, because the UN is running out of money. The WEF has been awash with money. And so, you know, most of the activities of the UN now are dominated by these joint policy groups, where the World Economic Forum, they're not just giving them the UN the money for nothing. They're now interfering in all round UN policy, and which I think is one of the reasons why we've seen, you know, a lot of dispute between China and the West. The West has tried very hard to take over all these international institutions. And of course, there's going to be a kickback from that. But yeah, I mean, WEF is a kind of outside version. Bilderberg is much more the hardcore secret military political elite who really are at, I mean, for example, as I said, at the heart of things like the Nord Stream pipeline operation, which the press have desperately tried to sort of cover up. But anybody with half a brain that's gone out looking for it can see exactly who's behind it. Cy Hirsch done a fantastic job on that. But it's us, you know, the Bilderbergers that have pointed out, hang on, guys, this must have been signed off at the Bilderberg conference. They were all in there, the people behind it. Is it Jake Sullivan, I think the guy's name is, main guy. And then this operation that started straight after the conference. This is why it's important that people get down to Lisbon and just eyeball these guys and also discuss on social media, etc. Everything needs to be pointing towards the Bilderbergers. I did a book, by the way, Jeremy, back a couple of years ago, which really does look at the roots of it with the Nazis. So this is Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, that was the chairman of Bilderberg for the first 20 years, was a former SS officer that betrayed the Netherlands in the invasion of Holland in 1944, Operation Market Garden, the film A Bridge Too Far. And that operation was scuppered by him sending the plans for the operation into the Germans, so they knew exactly what the British and the Americans were about to do at Market Garden. And so it really just nobbled the entire operation, which gave the Nazis an extra 4 or 5 months to squirrel their wealth around the world, a lot of it in Switzerland, get over to South America and all that stuff in order to start a Fourth Reich, which is a financial Fourth Reich, where you use banks instead of tanks to take over countries.
Ursula von der Leyen also has Nazi connections.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. Does she? That will be pleased to hear about it. Please tell us more.
Oh no, well I don't know the full details. I see someone in the live chat was saying now and posted a link, but obviously I don't have time to look at it now while I'm chatting to you. But
no, okay, well, that'd be Tony, great. Thank you. It's always good to have people chipping in because that's what real journalism is about, where everyone chips in and collaborates. It's like doing a jigsaw puzzle.
But Tony, I keep coming back to the same thought, and that is, how is it possible that these players, these actors in the Bilderberg Group and related, how do they have so much influence?
Well, it's through money. It's through ownership. And as my final comment just now is about a financial Fourth Reich. They want to own everything. They want to own the air that we breathe. They're certainly doing very well in, I mean, for example, in my city where I live in Bristol in the UK, every time you drive in and out of the city now, you're having to pay £10 charge. In London, it's going to the whole of London. If you want to go into London, you've got to pay £10 in a car. And actually in Venice last week, they announced that anyone that's traveling into Venice is going to have to pay money. I mean, you know, the idea is that they own the world, these people, and they are. They have the cheek of the devil that they're doing a privatization of everything, really. And that's how they've got their power. But I keep trying to mention the word evil because I think people have got to understand this is not just about money. It's about wickedness and it's about the wish to control and own people as if they are like cattle. They're like other, you know, animals. And one of the people that's done more than anybody else I can see in the whole world to really unravel this is the Canadian writer David Livingstone. I mean, I first came across him with his book called The Dying God, which is just really about this whole idea that there is a God, the sun God, that goes down every night and pops up every morning. But he's also talking about the idea of God being deliberately destroyed in the post-war era. So it's almost as if as we've gone away from these moral values, Christian, Judeo-Christian moral values. So things are getting worse and worse and worse. And in fact, you've got kids now being taught in schools that have never heard of Moses, for example. You know, the idea that you've never heard of like one of the great heroes of the Old Testament who freed his people from slavery. I mean, it's quite scary that this is not part of many kids' education. So David's also done a fantastic amount of work on transhumanism, on an understanding of the roots of it, who they are, the people that devised this idea and who talk about it. And one of the most bizarre things of all is this link I've got to this guy, Nick Land, the author of The Dark Enlightenment.
Mencius Wellbug.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I went to school with Nick, so, you know, I was actually good friends with him. He was known as Nick the Nazi. And it was only just an ordinary grammar school in southeast London. I suppose you could say it wasn't quite ordinary. We were next door to something called the Wellcome Trust. We used to call Burroughs Wellcome, which is where they were doing, in the 1970s, genetic engineering of animals and things like that. So we were always a little bit, you know, are we going to see a cow with two heads through the fence or what, you know? But I mean, Nick was great fun as a young, you know, teenager, but he was always had a very dark sense of humour. And I've approached him to try and get to interview him. He's living out in Shanghai now, unfortunately, you know. And if you're listening to this, Nick, please do, you know, it'd be really interesting to interview you about this whole business. But I mean, ultimately, people like Harari have picked up on this. The idea, of course, of the old Enlightenment many years ago, in the 1700s, etc., was that it was largely Masonic, right? Again, as like today, I think. But in those days, it was about getting all this technology out there for the Industrial Revolution and accelerating the idea of the steam engine, etc., getting it all out there. Nowadays, the Dark Enlightenment is much more about control. The idea that the best people to make decisions are computers. They make much more efficient decisions, and that actually humanity needs to be put underneath their control. So that's Nick's idea. I think it's a terrible idea, but I'd love to discuss and debate it with him. But the thing is, loads of people have picked up on this, Jeremy, all around the world. Mm. And my understanding of the Bilderbergers and Peter Thiel, etc., he's into this stuff, the transhumanism, etc., is that they don't really think much for themselves. They read this stuff and they think, that sounds cool. It justifies me being really greedy and being in charge, being in control and having more power. So I'm just going to buy into it. And so they repeat it ad nauseum.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you now. Isn't Dark Enlightenment a variation of that sort of neo-reactionary movement?
Yes, of course. Yeah, but I mean, it's just a formal document, which is really, I think it's a little bit like Ayn Rand after World War II came out with this sort of the idea of having a philosophy to justify selfishness, and this is actually what Satanism is. I mean, it's not dressing up in, you know, Anton LaVey-style capes. The idea is that you're justifying that you are God and you can become God. And of course, these super rich people that are now controlling our press, now controlling, you know, the eyes and ears and the nervous system of humanity, now controlling you know, also political parties and all those sorts of all the financial systems, it's not surprising that it's going to their heads. They're drunk on power, you know. And we had that with our Matt Hancock, our health secretary, actually saying, other MPs saying about him that he was drunk on power. He had this thing, he said, we're going to scare the hell out of the public in order to, and to do that, we're going to deploy a new variant. This is during COVID. Now, this sort of thing is literally power crazed maniacs in our government. And of course, he's been completely discredited with all the revelations that have happened over here. But yeah, the Dark Enlightenment is something very, I think, very important for people to understand that this is, I think, the philosophy they're working to. And they have absolutely no qualms about creating a third world war. I mean, if you look at what was going on in the lab in Wuhan, it's pretty obvious that the CIA and the Pentagon is in there. So the Chinese government didn't know about that. You're kidding me, you know? So the Chinese and the Americans are working together, I think, at the top level to create this third world war. And, you know, that's, to me, is there's also, there's loads of evidence if people actually go out and look for it, like the Chinese using all these US satellites for putting all their own people under surveillance. At the top level, these people are all interconnected with your Kissinger types, and they are trying to slowly but surely steer us towards a third world war, the purpose being very simple, a mass cull of the population, and secondly, their own, what they see as their own revolution, and they want to control the outcome in this very similar way to the Naomi Klein and her shock doctrine. You know, you create a bigger disaster, create the more change people will accept and the more power you can then control after that crisis.
All right, Tony, I have to just quickly do one more ad break. I'll be back with you shortly.
Give Me a Minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
When the grand jury in New York City indicts Donald Trump, history will have been made. It'll mark the first time a former U.S. president has faced such a fate. And to understand why it's happening, you need to know something about the man who's behind it all. He's Manhattan D.A. Alvin Bragg. Reportedly, he was elected with the backing of one George Soros. So he's, you know, one of these soft-on-crime D.A.s who has no trouble letting real criminals walk away. In January of last year, Bragg let it be known that he would not prosecute various crimes. Those include marijuana misdemeanors, not paying public transportation fare, resisting arrest, obstructing governmental administration in certain cases, and prostitution. The New York Post said Bragg ordered his prosecutors to downgrade felony charges in cases including armed robberies and drug dealing. But apparently Donald Trump is a greater threat to the safety of New Yorkers than armed robbers and drug dealers, because in this case, Bragg is reportedly attempting to take a misdemeanor and bump it up to a felony. Will he get away with all of this in the end? Stay tuned. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Germ Warfare with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Tony, should we fear the Bilderberg Group?
Well, no, I don't think so. That's why I'm going to be going down there to see them in May, God willing. You know, look, they try and use fear. The fear is the devil's most powerful weapon, and they know that. They want to press people's buttons, get people nervous. One of the biggest fears they use, by the way, is the fear of eviction. The idea of keeping people hanging on when it comes to renting or mortgages, this sort of thing. So you will be very, very focused on doing what you're told at work, because you know that, you know, your kids will be out on the street if you're not. So this is a very important, I mean, this is one of the reasons why I've been involved for a long time with the land reform campaigns here in the UK. There are several, but the idea that the earth is a common treasury for all. I mean, this is the idea that someone's going to be thrown out of their home. I think we should just make eviction a criminal offence, really. Simply, everyone needs somewhere to live. And why are you throwing somebody out? And I mean, the other thing is, if you've got security of tenure in your home, then you can then go and pick and choose who you work for. And they hate that idea. I mean, this is the sort of thing that we're discussing here quite a lot. We've got a very powerful landlord lobby through the Tory party, which is really the main problem behind what we call the cost of living crisis here, where people are having to pay more and more for their fuel and for their food, etc., and they can hardly afford to pay the rent. The idea, of course, is just to impoverish everyone. This is part of the Fourth Reich's war on individuals, on families, and the middle classes, particularly now, are finding that it's more and more difficult to sustain their job, sustain the morals in the job that they're doing, keep their homes, hand their homes on to their children, and all that sort of stuff. So fear, obviously, very important. And these are subconscious tools that can be used against people. So they just feel nervous about something. They're not really even thinking about it. Oh, I don't want to do that. It makes me feel nervous. That's the way they love to operate, is on your subconscious. And of course, if it doesn't get discussed in the mainstream media, the subconscious is the only place it is going to be talked about and discussed. I'd just like to, just if you don't mind, mention this depleted uranium story that's been in the news today, because we discussed that last week with Dr. Chris Busby. And in fact, looking at the way this story has exploded around the world since Putin talked about it, it may well be that Chris has started the ball rolling on this, because he's an ex-friend of mine from the old Ecology Green Party, the actual decent Greens in Britain that got kicked out by the Green fascists. Chris has been doing stuff on low-level radiation for many, many years. He was horrifically attacked by George Monbiot in The Guardian and his career destroyed by George. But he's been doing some Freedom of Information requests, and the facts are clear. We've had a doubling of the amount of uranium in the atmosphere since the beginning of the Ukraine war. And what he's suggesting is it looks to me as if the West has already been using, and Ukrainians already been using DU rounds against Russian armored fighting vehicles. He also, in the interview I did with him, explains exactly how the depleted uranium works. I mean, when you're enriching uranium, as of course the Iranians are doing, and you know all the nuclear powers are doing, that is to get out the U-235, which is what they want, and leave U-238, which is not so radioactive. That U-238 then can be put into a shell, around, fired into a tank, and as it hits the tank, it basically burns a hole through the tank and incinerates everybody inside the tank. So, but the thing is, it's also radioactive, not as radioactive as the 235, but you know, this is what Chris is pointing out. There is some evidence from these basic readings that have been taken by the British government that that there may be DU being used already in Ukraine, because there's a spike in these readings as the war started, and so it's interesting that you know that the Russians are also talking about this, because this is a way of just destroying a country by covering it with depleted uranium. It sits in the ground for years. It means the crops have got are going to have radiation in them. It's unusable. It's basically turning it into a radiation wasteland, as the old band Hawkwind used to sing about. You know, this is really absolutely fascinating, I think, to see that they're now saying, look, you know, you start using depleted uranium in there, this is going to up things. And of course, the main problem at the moment is, as we keep supplying longer and longer range weapons to the Ukrainians, the Russians have to push further and further in. And this is a covert way the West is using to make sure the war stays, stoking it and stoking it, keeping the whole war going as long as they can.
Now, as we coming into the last few minutes of the show, Tony, what do you see happening at this year's Bilderberg meeting?
Well, look, I mean, it's funny because it will be similar to last year's, I think, because the whole issue with Russia and the Michael Hudson style clash between industrial capitalism and finance capitalism that's going on there is absolutely their key business. And it always has been very much focused on Russia. Now, last year, they put Ukraine at the bottom of the agenda to make out that it was the least important thing they're thinking about. Of course, they're lying, as usual. It's really, I mean, it's impossible to say exactly what. Although I would point out that all these kind of sustainable development goals, I don't know if you've seen it, it's a brilliant graphic someone's just put together here in the UK, showing what all the, you know, exactly looking like the sustainable development goals that Prince Charles keeps waving around. But each one has been slightly changed. The graphic has changed to show you what it's really about. That clearly is the agenda they're trying to push forward at the Bilderbergers. But then they're also, you know, they're wanting to further their cause in the Russian war. So, I mean, it's basically about forwarding the great plan. This is what they called it from Albert Pike. All those, you know, what was it, a century and a half ago? The idea here is very simple. What you do is you create a new world order. And it started, of course, with the new world, what we call the North America. So that's why they've been doing this. Hang on a second. Sorry, just getting interrupted there. So just a second. Sorry. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
Go away. Please, I'm live here.
So,
all right,
so
okay.
Tony.
Sorry about that. Actually, no, I'm getting a cup of coffee, so I can't complain. All right, so, yeah, where were we?
Well, you've got your coffee just as we're coming into the last couple of minutes of the show.
Well, let me just say a couple of things to round it all up. Because I think, number one, I think we need to understand that there is a much higher purpose than Albert Pike. I mean, what they, Freemasons, etc., and the Satanists want is to just get rid of any kind of idea of proper morality. And they want to impose their own religion effectively. So we need to just hang on, I think, to those old Judeo-Christian values, the idea of simple, really simple stuff like love thy neighbor, you know, so you don't do that by making war on them and killing them. Really, really simple. uncomplicated things. The other thing is, do try to read between the lines in all of the news we're seeing. We're seeing some amazing stuff, all this stuff to do with digital ID. Well, it's there in the Book of Revelation, isn't it? You know, the idea that, you're going to have a microchip in your forehead, if you're one of the elite, and in your hand, if you're one of the worker bees. This is all there in the Book of Revelation, better than Nostradamus, if you ask me. So I think a combination of understanding exactly, it's most important to understand what's going on, because they are trying to bamboozle people by putting up these, boogeymen of Putin or Xi or whoever, and they're trying to drag you into this politics in our individual countries, which is really just the A team and the B team. You know, there's like the B team is in for a while, then the A team gets back in. And so they're really just, they're all one party states really here in the West now. You could also do, you could read one of my books. I've got two paperback books out. One is the one I was talking about, The Traitors of Arnhem, which is all about the origins of the Bilderberg conferences with Hitler's private secretary, Martin Bormann, very much involved in all that, and Winston Churchill's private secretary, who was Desmond Morton, communicating right through the final months of the war about how it was all going to be stitched up. And the other one is called The Siege of Heaven Reader, which is really a look at the occult secret government ever since the English Civil War, right the way through to the assassination of Princess Diana, including a load of detail on the actual Kennedy assassination and people who did that. And of course, you could do worse than listening to my 3 hours every week live program we do from Bristol in the UK, which is someone was pointing out to me recently, geopolitics and the occult, which we cover every week at thisweek.org.uk, Jeremy.
I just want to let you know that if I'm looking at the comments in the live chat, everybody loves what you're saying, and they particularly enjoyed you getting your coffee.
Yeah, I got it. I didn't know. I thought someone was trying to break into the car. And actually, I realized, oh, no, it's someone I know, and there's a cup of coffee there. So I can't complain about that at all.
I must tell you, though, it came through my headphones very loudly. I thought I was being attacked.
Listen, that's the beauty of live. Look, I remember, right, the early days, chatting to some of the BBC people in the 80s, the early days of broadcasting television was great fun. You just never knew what was happening. You switched everything on and it was all live. Alexandra Palace in north of London, when you watched television, it was all live. There was no recording. And of course, that is, I mean, when I visited the United States, I realized actually loads and loads of stuff in the United States was pre-recorded and edited. No, let's have live television. It's cheaper. Let's have live broadcasting. It's loads cheaper. And also, I mean, for example, before the Second World War and after the Second World War, they had to keep Winston Churchill, who Dennis Wheatley said was a member of the Illuminati, he thought, he had to keep him off the airwaves because when he was on live TV, he would just talk about, we got to nuke Moscow, you know, after the war. But the thing is, they also kept him off before the war, off the radio, because he was talking about the dangers of Adolf Hitler. And they didn't want the British people to know about that until the late, right, the end of the 1930s. And it wasn't government policy. Do you see what I mean? So live is always best. And I would always advise, your listeners, your viewers, to phone up your local phone-ins, etc. See if you can get on the radio, nag your local broadcasters, and try and get onto the mainstream. You may as well give it a shot, because they definitely need something to liven up their broadcasts too. And I do it from time to time here in the UK. It's not that difficult. Pick up the phone, get onto a phone-in. Come on.
Tony Gosling, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Nice one, Jeremy. Thanks for asking me again.
No, I'll definitely ask you yet again, because your knowledge and insight is second to none, Tony. So it's a great pleasure chatting to you.
One thing was so lovely at the BBC was to have people who had been working ever since World War II in broadcasting and in film and things like that, who were kind of my mentors, because it was a completely different organization in those days. I will just remind you of our weekly
very quickly,
show.
Very quickly.
This week.org.uk. We've got one of the top writers on the 9/11 attacks on tomorrow, as well as hopefully one of the imprisoned anarchists who was put in jail because of the Kill the Bill protests in Bristol that went all around the world 2 years ago with the burning police vehicles. So we try and keep it real, local, and it's basically geopolitics and the occult every Friday, thisweek.org.uk.
Tony Gosling, thank you. It's been a pleasure. And by the way, everybody send me an email, jimwarfare@tntradio.live. Give me feedback, give me hate mail, whatever you want. Thank you to Alex for keeping the show going. All right. What other housekeeping have I got? Oh, that's right. Download the TNT app. It's in the Google and Apple store. Listen to this conversation again. Share it. Get other people to listen to it. It is a great, great conversation. I love chatting to Tony. I think that is me. I think, Alex, I think I'm done. All right, let's do this. My name is Jerm. This is Jerm Warfare, the battle of ideas.